The war in Ukraine has polarised the international community. As the East versus West power struggle intensifies, traditional alliances are put to the test. And as countries try to navigate the geopolitical dynamics, there is a lot at stake, from regional security to financial stability and energy dependency. Before Russia invaded Ukraine, the EU sourced nearly half of its natural gas from Moscow, but that share declined sharply between the first and third quarters of the year. While most of Europe moves away from Russian goods, some EU countries are cementing their relations with Moscow. 80% of Hungary's oil and gas supply comes from Russia, and Budapest has taken out a $10 billion loan from a Russian state bank to pay a Russian company to build nuclear reactors. So will Hungary ever wean itself off Russian imports? And is it putting historic ties with the Kremlin ahead of its relationship with Europe? These are some of the questions we put to the Hungarian Foreign Minister. Peter Sziarto talks to Al Jazeera. Hungarian Foreign Minister Peter Sziarto, thank you for talking to Al Jazeera. First of all, what are you doing in Doha? Germany, not so long ago, just a couple of weeks ago, signed a 15-year deal with Qatar to supply natural gas to ensure its long-term energy security. Is that something that you, Hungary, are looking to do?
I'm meeting my colleague, the Foreign Minister, Deputy Prime Minister, and then the Minister of Energy. And with both colleagues, I have very important talks about the bilateral relationship on economic, financial, and energy side, of course. I was very happy when I learned about this agreement between Germany and Qatar, because I do hope that such kind of forms of practical cooperation will help to put the Qatar-Europe cooperation on a more pragmatic basis. So instead of the constant lecturing and judgment on behalf of some European friends toward Qatar, this relationship would be based on mutual respect and pragmatism and looking for the mutual benefits. So I was very happy with the news. On the other hand, yes, definitely. We are looking for ways and means of diversification, no question. Although I have to tell you that for us, unlike some other European countries, for us diversification means to be able to reach out to as many sources as it is just possible, on as many routes as it is just possible, and not that instead of one geographic direction we turn to the other one. So when it comes to diversification, we don't do it in order to get rid of the Russian energy sources, because the Russian energy sources play a very important role in our economy and in the operation of our country, but the more sources, the better. The more routes of delivery is the better. And we look at Qatar as a very reliable partner, no question. And since there's an LNG port in our neighborhood in Croatia, where Hungary is the number one customer, so we have capacities booked there, it is a kind of a likely scenario or a realistic scenario that once gas from Qatar would be added to our national energy mix. That is to our interest, definitely.
Is that something that we can expect to be announced in the near future?
Well, I hope. I mean, today, of course, we have to lay down the political basis for this cooperation, but then the contract, the agreement should be made on a corporate basis between the two companies, Qatar Energy and our electricity company, who is responsible for purchasing and distributing gas. So if the political foundations are there, then it definitely depends only on the corporate level.
How important is it for Hungary to diversify its energy, where it gets its energy from? I mean, at the moment you're getting 80% of your energy needs from Russia.
Yeah.
I mean, how important is it to try and wean yourself off Russian oil and gas?
I mean, look, there are figures which describe the situation, I think, very thoroughly. We consume 11 billion cubic meters of gas on an annual basis, so gas plays a hugely important role in our national energy mix, out of which 85% is being imported, out of which 100% basically is being imported from Russia or from a Russian source. On the oil side, 65% of our oil is being imported from Russia. So 85% and 65% of share of imports, which means that it's a huge dependency. On the other hand, I have to tell you that we have positive experience. So both on the side of oil and on gas, the Russian partners have been reliable so far. They have delivered on time and according to contract. Even when we needed more gas during September and October in order to be able to pile up the stocks in our storages, then the Russians were helpful and have increased the daily volume. So, I mean, they are predictable, they are reliable, but of course, from a national strategic perspective, diversification is extremely important. And when it comes to diversification, then it is being basically determined by physics, right? I mean, as long as you can deliver gas on pipeline, the pipeline infrastructure determines your situation. And we are now working on having access to the LNG ports in Greece and in Turkey in order to be able to add additional sources to our national energy mix. Now, since investment, I mean infrastructural development, should be made outside of Hungary, that's why we are dependent on some other actors as well. Here we expect the European Union to step up and play an important role. Because if you look at the Central European region, especially Hungary, we are basically in the middle. Mm-hmm. In the middle of the land Europe. So meaning we are a landlocked country. And as a landlocked country, you cannot build an LNG port because you don't have seaside. So what you can do is to interconnect yourself with the most possible neighbors. We have done it with 6 of the 7. But what happens after? It's not your national authority. So that's why we hope that the European Union will step up in a way that that it will finance upgrading the infrastructure around Hungary, which would make additional sources accessible for us, among them the Qatari gas.
If it was at all possible to do it immediately, would you want to, you know, in light of the invasion of Ukraine, would you want to do away with importing any more Russian oil and gas from tomorrow, if you could?
No, I mean, you know, we have always looked at this issue from a pragmatic perspective. And we need the Russian energy sources. And there's no scenario for the upcoming decade that we would not need, simply because of the infrastructure. You cannot replace that big amount of energy sources that we import from Russia entirely. And, you know, as long as we have a contract and that contract is being, you know, fulfilled, there's no real reason to
But there is ahead. A war.
Yeah, of
they've,
course.
You know, they've invaded one of your neighbors.
And, which we definitely condemn.
It's one thing to condemn the war, but it's another thing. You know, some of your critics have argued that Hungary is actually helping to fund Putin and help him pay for the war by still purchasing Russian oil and gas. What do you say to that?
Look, if we ruin ourselves, then we will not be able to help Ukraine. And withdrawing from the contracts with Russia on energy supply would mean destroying the country. Because physically speaking, we cannot replace the Russian energy sources. So it's not
other European countries have been able to do that.
Yeah,
so
why
not Hungary?
Yeah, because they have a different, you know, geographic location and different infrastructure. But if you look at the infrastructure around Hungary, it will be very obvious for you that physically speaking, it is impossible to replace the Russian gas and oil. Why? Given oil, for example. Russia supplies us, Slovakia, and partly Czech Republic, through the pipeline called Druzhba. Now, let's play with the idea of cutting the deliveries on Druzhba. It means that you need another pipeline from somewhere else, right? There's one pipeline coming from the Adriatic Sea, from Croatia, which has much less capacity than the demand of Hungary, Slovakia, and partly Czech Republic. So what would it mean that if we phase the Russian deliveries out, then we cannot operate the country. So, and if you cannot operate the country, you'll destroy your economy. There's no hope that you can help Ukraine. Look, now we have allocated 180 million euros to help Ukraine to maintain its operation. We have hosted 1 million refugees so far. We have offered 1,000 scholarships for young students from Ukraine. There are 1,225 schools in Hungary which have already enrolled Ukrainian refugees. So my question is how we could afford that if we couldn't operate the country. So you have to think rationally in this regard while definitely condemning the war, but putting into consideration that if you ruin yourself, you cannot help.
You've said previously that you don't believe the EU and the West sanctions against Russia are working. Why do you think that? And also, what's the alternative?
Look, I think we should bring back the debate to a basis of reality and common sense and look at the facts. After the war had broken out, we discussed the first package of sanctions at the end of February, beginning of March. And I remember the debate that time. The argumentation used by the European Commission and the expectations attached to the sanctions was that those will help to bring Russia on its knees, economically speaking, which will force Russia to stop the war. So the sanctions would help us to stop the war as soon as possible. Now, more than 9 months, right? 9 months, more than 9 months have gone. We have applied eight packages of sanctions. Now the ninth is coming up, and the war is more brutal than ever. And the negative impact of the sanctions are bigger on us, ourselves in Europe, than on Russia. Now, why would you continue a policy which is more painful to you yourself compared to those against whom you wanted to implement them? Just speaking on the language of numbers regarding Hungary. Last year, on a national level, we had to pay 7 billion euros for imported energy. 7 billion euros. Now, this year, we have to pay somewhere between 17 and 19 billion euros. And if everything continues as it looks like, next year, our dues will reach 29 billion euros. So from 7 through 17 to 29 billion, this is the impact. And once again, if we ruin ourselves, if we lose the chance to keep our economies on a growing path, then my question is, who will finance the reconstruction of Ukraine? Who will finance the Ukrainian state to be operational?
So what's the alternative, though? If sanctions aren't working, I mean, you can condemn the war, but you've got to take other steps, surely.
Look, if you look back to history, then we see that all wars have ended up by negotiations. So I think what is very important, and I'm happy that partly the German chancellor and the French president is kind of on board in this regard, that we do have to talk to the Russians about finishing the war. And I'm happy that both Chancellor Scholz and President Macron are doing that from time to time. Because if we cut all the lines of communication, then we basically give up the hope for peace. There will be no peace unless there are discussions. So I think discussion should be taken seriously, should be continuously made. Because if you look back after the Crimea issue, the Minsk agreements have been established, and at least they have helped to avoid the escalation, right? Now, unfortunately, there's no Minsk process anymore, but there's a war. So I think that we should talk to the Russians very seriously. Now, I understand that Russians rather think that U.S. should be around the table as well. I agree. I definitely do agree. So I do think that the Americans should be involved here in order to come to an agreement which would bring the war to an end. Look, I'm living in Hungary. I and we Hungarians have been faced with the really, really terrible, situations. 1 million refugees arriving, 90% those are torn apart families without fathers. So the mothers are bringing the children, sometimes the grandparents, you know. And it's heartbreaking to see that. Winter is coming. If there's no electricity in a country, if there's no proper heating system operational in a country, you can imagine the scope or the extent of the humanitarian catastrophe in this regard. So I think we Europeans, and the Americans as well, should concentrate on bringing this war to its end. Now, we are a small landlocked country in Central Europe, as I told you, so we have a limited leverage in this regard, to say the maximum. So I think that the big and strong countries should bear the flag here.
I also want to talk about Finland and Sweden. And, sure. You know, they have made it very clear that they want to join NATO as soon as possible. There's only two countries, Hungary and Turkey, that are holding out on them being able to do so. Why is Hungary holding out on allowing Finland and Sweden to join NATO?
Look, our situation is very clear here. We have nothing against them joining NATO. There's no serious political force in Hungary which would be against them joining our...
Why has it taken so long?
I've discussed with them just recently on the margins of the Bucharest NATO foreign minister, and I told them that they should not be afraid. They should be relaxed, because it will not depend on us, not even for one day, for them to become NATO members. What is happening is the following. I myself, on behalf of the government, has submitted the draft to the parliament already in summer to deal with the ratification process. It would have been the case if Brussels, I mean European Commission, had not required us to put forward 17 pieces of legislation quickly in order to address the expectations of the European Commission.
You're talking about the corruption, yeah?
When it comes to the European funds, right?
Yes.
So we have done it, and I told very clearly to my colleagues that now the Parliament made a clear decision to deal with that. We finished with that. The session is over. The next year session will start on 15th of February, and on the first session, it's going to be on the agenda. And I think they have accepted that.
The Hungarian opposition parties have called the delay incomprehensible and unjustified. I mean,
that's the job of opposition.
Yeah, exactly. But many other European countries have also said the same thing. Finland and Sweden. We did a talk to Al Jazeera with the president of Finland about 5 or 6 weeks ago, and you could sense his frustration at the delay over this. So, what do you say to him? I mean, they are also on the border of Russia.
Yeah.
You know, they are worried about a physical invasion. So what do you say to him and the people of Finland and of Sweden?
Yeah, look,
delay.
Yeah, I constantly talk to the foreign ministers. My prime minister has talked over the phone to the president of Finland. We made it very clear that we're not going to be the last one. They can be absolutely sure. So it does not depend on us whether they become members of NATO or not. And that was purely because of the busy agenda of the parliament required by the European Commission. That was the only issue. I made it very clear to them. Since we are done with the EU required issues, when we start in February, it's going to be on the agenda of the first meeting. And
so you can pledge that today? You can pledge today that it will be on the agenda
Made a pledge to them when we met in Bucharest. And what is even more important than my pledge, my prime minister made it very clear to the other Central European partners very recently when they met. You know, we have a formation which is called the V4. That's Slovakia, Czech Republic, Poland and Hungary. Mm. A very important alliance.
Just going back to, you mentioned negotiations and the US. I mean, how do you see these two sides coming together, or the three sides really, the US, Russia and Ukraine? Can you really see all three of them sitting down around a table in the near future?
Maybe it's a dream currently, or an illusion. But I think if we don't give a chance to that, then we're going to be on the wrong side of the history. So,
what needs to happen for that to begin?
Look, I think they should give up their willingness to stick to protocol, to show strength, whatever.
Who are you talking about?
I mean all of them.
All three of them.
Sure, yeah. They should sit at the table. And you know, I don't want to be a judge there, but what I know is that it's bad for the people. Thousands of people are dying. Tens or hundreds of thousands of people are freezing. Millions are fleeing. So, I mean, come on, it's time to finish this.
Do you see the grain deal that was done with Turkey, the prisoner swap recently? Does that give you any hope that, they're small in terms of the scale of the war and what's happened in this war. But does that give you any hope that...
Yeah, sure. No question. And, you know, I really applaud the efforts of Turkey, because... I mean, so far, the only successful mediation attempt has been completed by Turkey. And the grain deal is a huge issue, I think. Because, don't forget, that the lack of food and the scarcity of food is another reason for further illegal migratory waves to break out. And we in Hungary are in a very specific geographic situation. Because we are neighbors to Ukraine from the east, so we have the million refugees coming from there. But from the south, we are having the external border of the European Union and the Schengen area. And this year, only this year, up to now, we had to stop 255,000 illegal migrants at our southern border. So, I mean, we are under double pressure. While we allow all the refugees to come in, as it is normal, we stop all the illegal migrants, which is our obligation. So we have spent 1.6 billion euros already to protect the border of ours, which is a European obligation. Although I have to tell you that the European Union reimburses only 1.2% of our costs, but I mean, anyhow, we protect the border. That's not a question. But I mean, that border of ours is under is under siege because the migrants, and especially the traffickers, are using guns, weapons, on our policemen. So it's a totally new dimension of aggression and violence which takes place at our southern border. And if those regions of the world, which are kind of easier to be destabilized, don't get enough food, then these migratory waves will be even tougher.
Just on, I mean, there's been a lot made of the way that Hungary deals with the Ukrainian refugees as opposed to others who are coming through your southern border. Can you explain why you treat them differently, why you throw your arms open and welcome the Ukrainian refugees while spending $1.2 billion, was it, on defending... $1.6 billion on defending your southern border?
It's very simple. International law speaks very clearly. If you are forced to leave your home, if you have to escape, then you are entitled to stay on the territory of the first safe country. You must be allowed to enter the first territory of first safe country, and you must be allowed to stay there. For Ukrainians, we are the first safe country because we are neighbors. But for those who are coming from the south, they had to cross at least 6, 7, 8, 10 safe countries, and they have no right to violate border between two peaceful countries. So international law does not entitle anyone to pick a country where he or she would like to live, and in order to get there, you just, you know, violate the borders. And that happens. So, I mean, Serbia is a peaceful and safe country. There can be no explanation and no reason and no excuse for anyone to violate that border between Serbia and Hungary. That's a very simple reason.
Okay. A million refugees have come from Ukraine.
Yeah.
You've spoken about what Hungary is doing to help them and support them. What happens when the war is over? It's obviously costing your country a lot of money to care for them. Are you going to keep caring for them? Are they going to be able to stay there for, you know, and set up their lives there in the long term?
Well, we have a very clear position on that. They can stay as long as they want, regardless whether the war is over or not. So as long as they want, they can stay there. They have equal access to healthcare and to the labor market and to education equally to the Hungarian citizens. So we even give incentive to the employers to employ refugees. And as I told you, more than 1,200 schools have already enrolled the Ukrainian refugee kids and students.
Okay, just finally, obviously we're heading into the depths of winter in Europe. How do you see the next 3 or 4 months playing out in terms of the war? Is it just going to be, is it just going to continue to get worse? Are the two sides, just Ukraine and Russia, just going to continue to butt heads in the east?
Look, if the war is not being stopped in the upcoming couple, but when I say couple, I say limited number of weeks, then there's going to be a huge tragedy and a very serious humanitarian catastrophe. Because the winter is going to be harsh. It's not like here, of course. And if you don't have electricity, you don't have heating during a harsh winter, you can imagine the outcome. And we should not wait for that. So I mean, the war has to be stopped. And when it comes to Europe and when it comes to winter, you know, this winter is going to be kind of okay from the perspective of energy supply in Europe. But the real challenge will be the next winter. And I tell you why, because by spring, when we will have to start to rebuild our stocks in the gas storages, there will be no Russian gas at disposal, with some exceptions, for example, Hungary, but generally speaking, Europe, there will be no real big quantity of Russian gas. And just knowing the figures that Europe used to consume 170 billion cubic meters of Russian gas, and having known the volume of alternative sources and especially the incoming capacities to Europe, there's not a balanced situation there. So I don't know how it's going to take place. Experts warn on that as well. Of course, stopping the war would help there as well, of course. So I could list you thousands of reasons why the war should be stopped.
Yeah? Yeah. I mean, you're painting a pretty grim picture. Do you hold out any hope that things are going to get better, or are they going to get much, much worse Over the next 12 months or so?
No, sure. I mean, we have to keep the hope alive. Otherwise, I mean, if we give up the hope, then it's over. So we have to maintain the hope. And that's why I hope it's encouraging when I listen to the news and hear that American and Russian intelligence leaders talk to each other, meet on a regular basis. That's a good basis and a good start. But what I think is that the political leaders of them should talk to each other, and if they don't do it, then it's gonna be really bad.
Of course. Peter Sziarto, Foreign Minister of Hungary, thank you so much for talking to Al Jazeera.
Thank you, I appreciate the opportunity.